welcome to Reading Watchmen. I'm Jim Bob.
And I'm Joe.
And together,
we are one drink in. This is your first time joining us. We are going chapter by chapter in the graphic novel Watchmen. We are now on issue 8.
Chapter 8, The Ocho.
The Ocho. Old Ghosts. If this is your first time joining us, there will be spoilers. We will be talking about Chapter 8 and previous chapters, but we will hold off on spoiling later chapters.
We'll have a ding, and then we'll start spoiling chapters after Chapter 8. Mm-hmm. So if you've read the book before, or if you've seen the HBO TV show, we'll talk about that.
Yes.
We might talk about Zack Snyder's movie. We might talk about various Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
You never know.
There are no rules on this podcast.
And then there will be another ding in which we spoil life. We just ruin it for you.
It does. You're not going to like how it ends.
It's really sad. So you might want to tune out before that second ding. But, you know, hang in there for the first ding because we have a lot to cover.
We sure do.
Let's jump in, shall we?
Yep. So this issue is called Old Ghosts.
Old Ghosts.
And it is mostly about Dan and Lori trying to spring Rorschach from prison.
That's right.
We get a little bit of side stories as well as we visit our news vendor guy and his daily goings on.
Tensions are rising at the newsstand for sure.
Definitely. We also hear from Hollis Mason and Sally Jupiter.
Yeah.
They share an expensive long distance phone call.
It's very expensive.
Although apparently, adjusted for inflation and everything, that phone call would have been about $11.
I mean, that could be a pretty penny for Hollis Mason, a struggling mechanic.
A humble car mechanic.
Basically retired. Mm-hmm. Who knows what his business is like. I'm sure it's not.
He's got some royalties coming in from that book, I guess.
Probably. I would think so. Yeah. It's a shame it's a shame it wasn't present day. He could have had a social media.
They could have Skyped for free.
Well, that too. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Who's looking at long distance? I feel like maybe it's still a thing. We don't have minutes anymore.
If you're a minutes? Sucker.
I can't make a phone. I'm out of minutes. What?
I kind of just missed that.
Yeah.
Like when I got a cell phone, I was on the family plan.
Yeah.
And so like I didn't have to worry about that so much.
What about?
Or I just didn't worry about it.
It was like long distance to call out of state. You remember that? Like other zip codes was a long
so
distance.
Weird.
Oh, man. Different times.
Yep.
I'm glad that we're living in the best time.
Are we? Yeah, all this Cold War paranoia is over. Everything's smooth sailing. Yeah,
the looming of World War III.
The economy's doing great.
Boy, I told you we were going to spoil everything for you. Let's get back into the episode issue. What else? There's a lot of recurring themes in this issue.
For sure. So this issue takes place on Halloween for the most part, if not the whole part, really.
What an appropriate name. Old Ghosts.
Yep. And so another ghost, the Silk Spectre, a ghost, comes out of retirement and does some superheroing.
She does.
Along with her good pal, also retired Night Owl.
Night Owl 2.
Night Owl 2 and Silk Spectre 2. It's Return of the Twos, the sequel.
Perfect. And Deuces?
Deuces Wild.
Deuces Wild. So we open up with, I think we open up with Hollis Mason talking.
To Sally.
To Sally.
He calls her up because he sees on the news that he could only figure that it's Dan and Lori who have saved people from a fire in a tenement building. And so he's just like, yeah, you know, nobody else knows it's them but us. And it's kind of cool, right? Like superheroes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of have this nostalgic sort of old timer conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Sally says, you had my number this whole time and you wait until we're all old.
Oh, that's
before
Sally.
You call me.
Ever the lascivious. But she also is like, I couldn't help but notice that almost everything she says about Lori is kind of critical.
Yeah, for sure.
She talks about how like a week after John leaves Earth, she's shacked up with Dan Dreiberg.
And she almost seemed impressed, though.
Well, okay. I guess you could read that different ways.
That's how I read it.
Yeah. But neither one is really good.
No. You know? Yeah, it's like she was proud for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have that conversation. We see that her little, like, retirement community is called Nepenthe Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Nepenthe is actually of, I think, Greek.
It is Greek.
Mythology.
Look at you.
Yeah. It's a fictional medicine for sorrow, a drug of forgetfulness, mentioned in ancient Greek literature and Greek mythology.
Indeed.
It's a carnivorous plant.
It's mentioned in The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm.
Quaff this kind nepenthe and forget.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. Interesting little tie-in there. Alan Moore certainly loves his literary,
especially Greek stuff. It's all over this comic book.
Yeah.
We got like the Gordian knot.
Yeah.
We got the Promethean cab company.
Yep.
We got all kinds of stuff.
Of course.
So, next we go after their phone call, you know, they hung up. It's almost a little bit ominous, like calm before the storm sort of thing. We don't see their faces while they're talking. And we get this nice shot of kids in Halloween costumes before the title, Old Ghosts.
Old Ghosts.
And we go back to this really cool technique they always have of, layering the dialogue from different sources. Mm. So we've got, the newsstand conversations in parallel with the Tales of the Black Freighter. And they're sort of like, calling out all the things, all the various pieces of the conspiracy that, they don't know how, we don't know how they fit together, but they're sort of like almost going down a checklist, it seems like sometimes, like mask, the superheroes are in the news and getting, killed or abducted or exiled or what have you. Mm. The Russians are going all crazy.
Yeah.
He mentions the Rorschach we see like that panel from the previous issue where he, the newsstand guy was bragging about Rorschach being a regular customer.
Right, right.
And we find out that, or I guess we don't find out, but we can see that that's Malcolm Long he's talking to. But
yeah,
he just kind of.
You can recognize him by the bow tie.
Yeah. And yeah, his hat with his earphone hat.
Mm-hmm. The earphone hat. I forgot about this.
But yeah, so we're kind of like getting back into it with that kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Super cool.
So yeah, they show the newsstand guy with Dr. Malcolm Long coming up, and he's kind of bragging about how Rorschach was a subscriber, whatever, mm-hmm. customer.
Regular customer, yep.
And Malcolm doesn't seem too impressed, or he just has a weird reaction.
He calls him Kovacs, because this is when he's still calling him Kovacs.
Because but then the guy walks away, Malcolm Long walks away, and the news guy is preoccupied type.
Yeah, probably
a teacher thinking about algebra, relativity.
Yeah, one of those like head in his clouds intellectual types.
Yeah.
They don't know what life is like. They don't know what it's like down here on the front lines.
Just
he's got a New York accent.
Kind of funny. Like he thinks he knows everything, but clearly knows nothing.
Yeah.
Because that reaction was very, Malcolm Long is intimately familiar with Walter Kovacs.
And just how dire life is in general in the situation. Like,
right.
I think this guy overestimates like his own awareness of everything because he's like, oh, I see all the headlines. I know how it really
is. That's right. Well, he also, I think earlier he says that, a lot of stuff happens under the waterline.
Uh huh.
Basically saying, you don't really know the full story.
That's true.
You think you know somebody, but then here he is pretending like he knows everything about Malcolm Long when he knows nothing
exactly.
about him.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's awesome.
So then we,
next page, we got, Laurie and Dan, preparing Dan is, making preparations. He's on like the owl computer, which I think is kind of funny. Cause like, he's like, my computer lists most people Nova Express mentioned as employed by a research company called Dimensional Developments, blah, blah, blah. And so like, it's kind of like this pre-internet idea that like, if you have a computer, you could find just about any
just
information
everything.
On it.
Yeah. It's like Batman really.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the Batcave with the multiple monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it does kind of provide a nice little list for us because he mentions that like the corporate structure.
Oh yeah.
Is all like a maze. It's all confusing and complicated. And that, Nova Express is like, or not Nova Express. Well, it, I mean, it is.
Nova Express is owned by like Pyramid Industries or something.
Well, the Institute for Extraspatial Studies, that's the one.
Ah, yes. It's all tied together.
That's all. That's funded by the Pyramid Deliveries, which, and that company hired like Janie Slater and Wally Weaver and Moloch even after he was out of jail.
That's right.
So like he's starting to see all these connections that Rorschach was talking about.
A vast and insidious conspiracy.
Vast and insidious. Both. So yeah, he's definitely fallen down that rabbit hole, and he's just kind of obsessed at this point with breaking Rorschach out.
Mm-hmm.
And Lori is obsessed with not wanting to do that.
Yeah, right. But she's tagging along because, you know, it's what girlfriends do, is support.
Day two girlfriends.
That's right. So they're planning the breakout.
We got these really cool shots on these two pages of like the same space, but like the panel is broken up over time. So you've got like this panorama.
Oh, yeah.
Past the owl car as Lori walks past it. And then you got a cool one on the next page of the inside of Archie with all their clothes still lying on the floor from the night before. Yep. As they're talking about, you know, getting their costumes back on and going out there. And then we go to the prison.
The prison.
Where
we meet Big Figure.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about him, but now we get to meet him.
Yep. Finally get to see the Big Figure himself.
You know, he's smaller in person than I was expecting.
Not quite as big a figure as
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, they visit Rorschach in solitary. Like, they tell the guard to, like, scram, threatening his family and whatnot.
Yeah, I like how first they threaten his wife, and he's like, nah, you guys get out of here. Move along. What about your kids? Oh, no. Fine.
I didn't know you knew about them.
That just cracked me up.
And then, yeah, so Rorschach exercises his classic wit and says, Big Figure, small world.
Oh, man. Rorschach's got some great quips.
He's got that, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Big Figure lights up a cigar, which I feel like is kind of, if you're in prison, like a status symbol.
Probably hard to come by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So lighting up a cigar is probably like, you know, just shows that he's basically in charge of everything.
You know, that
he's got these goons with him.
The cigar and the fact that he's just freely roaming the prison outside of his cell.
He also wears an ascot, which I imagine is hard to get in prison.
You know, those ascots were highly fashionable 20 years ago.
I want you to smuggle me in an ascot. You hear me?
It was at the height of his criminal enterprise.
I wonder how they had to smuggle that ascot into prison.
In his ass?
Somebody's.
It's an ass ascot. So then he's got this line where he's kind of threatening Rorschach. You're alone in the Valley of the Shadow, Rorschach.
I like
the only
that.
Thing between you and me is this crummy lock.
One crummy lock.
And it's just locks. Locks are kind of a recurring theme throughout.
That's true,
but
yeah.
But especially in this issue, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
We got this lock. This lock is a big...
Dan Dreiberg's lock,
yeah.
On the next page, we get Dan Dreiberg gets a visit from Detective Fine. And we see like Dan Dreiberg's lock in every panel that we see it is like sparkling, shining.
Yes.
Like a brand new lock.
So that's kind of a recurring thing too. That little like shine on the lock.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same shine we saw in Hollis Mason's award.
Yeah.
The golden.
The statue.
The Night Owl statue in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like gleaming.
Almost like it's hinting at something.
Mm.
But yeah, so Detective Fine finds his way. He basically lets himself in. I feel like I missed where he actually entered.
Yeah, you think he just like let himself in, walks past the guy who's fixing the lock.
That's right.
Because his lock is always broken. Every chapter, he's got somebody fixing his lock.
And so, yeah, he notes the he starts like looking around at all Dan's stuff. He's like, he notes the sugar cubes that he has.
Notes the sugar cubes. You can only buy them in like massive quantities.
Yeah.
Catering something.
Yeah. Catering quantities. And he mentions that when they picked up Rorschach, he had sugar cubes
had
in his pocket.
In his pocket. Yeah.
He also mentions that, or Dan mentions he doesn't smoke, but he finds Lori's ball pipe in an ashtray.
Looks at his owl.
Owl calendar
on the
wall. So he's been some not so subtle with his hints about like, you know, you better be careful if you're thinking about doing any owl shit because, you know, yeah, we got our eyes on you or whatever.
We also see a newspaper on Dan's table talking about tanks in Eastern Europe.
Oh, boy.
Purely defensive, says Reds. So you can see that the war tensions are rising. Now, in the absence of Dr. Manhattan, it seems like it's getting closer every day.
Tick-tock. Every day, counting down to something. Then we get to the we get to see the editors of the New Frontiersman. And he's, you know, the chief editor and Seymour, his like his lackey, I guess, his
good
employee.
Seymour, yeah.
And they're putting together today's issue, and he's talking about, you know, he's talking about the masked vigilantes who are, you know, he's got the connection between Rorschach and Night Owl and what's his the comedian? Blah, I can't get it out today. But anyways, yeah. So they're putting that together, and he tells, you know, Seymour to pull something from the crank file.
The crank file.
He's like, how about this article on the people of the United States of America? You know, just to make it clear what the New Frontiersman's really about.
Yeah, that and his name?
Mac
Godfrey?
Shea?
No, oh, yeah. Godfrey, Godfrey's like the head of the, he's talking about he wants food, but he doesn't want any of that Gunga Diner shit. Like, he wants American food, like a burger.
Yeah, he calls them hanky heads.
Yeah, so clearly the New Frontiersman is a little slanted. You can tell there's a couple hints.
It's pretty subtle.
I love the symmetry of these pages. Mm-hmm. Like, both, you got on one side, you've got Seymour and the New Frontiersman. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you've got Max Shea on the island.
Mm-hmm.
But both shots are like, each panel is kind of fixed on the same thing.
Yeah.
The people move around, but they're focused on the...
In both cases, it's like something that they're creating.
Exactly, yeah. And then on the underneath, you've got these shots of Lori and Dan getting ready for the jailbreak.
Yeah.
I can just hear like some Ocean's 11 soundtrack playing over there. they're preparing,
uh-huh.
You know.
And I do love that, you know, we get to meet Max Shea basically getting drunk and talking about the squid monster.
Yes. So we get to see the island that we've been hearing about. The comedian referenced in, I don't know, issue 3, something pretty early on.
Yeah, it was a while ago. And we have the artist drawing a picture of it.
Of something,
yes. Something pretty horrific looking.
Yeah, Max Shea's talking about how he can't wait to get back to the mainland and that these Hollywood producers are paranoid.
So, yeah, so apparently they're on a movie set.
I guess they're working on some sort of a movie
set. Ostensibly.
You got this writer. You've got this woman who is a surrealist painter, we find out.
Mm-hmm.
And she's drawing something.
It sure is ominous.
It is ominous.
If nothing else.
Yeah.
And that's the only scene we get of them. We don't really know, like, that. You know, it's kind of a weird, for it being the only scene of the island where this disappeared artists have gone to, we don't really get a lot from it. So, yeah, it's pretty, that I feel like that in itself is pretty ominous.
Very much so.
And then we get also like next two pages, like you said, also pretty similar.
Again.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
We get Hollis Mason carving a pumpkin right over the owl ship as it's preparing to take off.
As he's listening to, I think, the head of the Nova Express talking about how bad the New Frontiersman
is. Doug Roth. Yeah.
So we've just got the right versus the left.
Yeah. So the news media going after each other.
Imagine living in a world like that.
I'm so glad that our news media is impartial and of integrity.
I would rather just stay at home carving a pumpkin and just tune it all out.
I do like how some of the pumpkin goo falls over one of the pumpkin's eyes.
Oh my
gosh.
Sort
of like the smiley face.
Yes. Perfect.
And then the next page, our plot line at the newsstand.
The newsstand
is getting really crazy as some knot tops are talking about like what atomic bombs and
just everything that's
going
on.
One of them wants to get some Katie's, which is a street drug,
mm-hmm.
possibly ketamine. It's not really sure.
Yeah.
We got Tales of the Black Freighter.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah. Going on and on. Tales of the Black Freighter is kind of interesting because, like, you know, it's a comic book in the comic book. But since they can't draw out every page and panel of mm-hmm. that comic, I think they, like, make up for that by filling it with text. Like, it probably has more text than most comic books like ever would.
Sure.
Everything is described in text boxes and captions. But maybe that's just what you do when you can't literally draw out, you know, every panel of the comic book.
Right. We get to meet Derf. And he seems like a Derf. He really lives up to that.
He's got a pale horse jacket.
Got the pale horse jacket, got the knot top look, and
some sweet sunglasses.
All jacked up on Katie. Just going off on everything. Doesn't like the mass vigilantes, doesn't like.
He's talking about actually in this panel, he's talking about War of the Worlds. Because in a previous panel, it shows that that's playing at that theater.
Okay.
So we've got that vintage movie playing. And he's basically describing the plot here. He's like, yeah, the space guy comes to warn everybody about nuclear war. And then, you know, these, he basically just, you know, lays out a really like, you know, minimalized version of that. Like, and then they start talking about the superheroes and everything just kind of goes a little bit crazy.
Yeah. It escalates. You got what was her name? Joey.
Yeah. She shows up. Looking for a paper. For
apartments because she broke up with her girlfriend. And then the Knot Tops start picking a fight with her too.
Yeah, one of the Knot Tops is like demanding Katie's from Derf.
Derf.
He's apparently the one who holds the Katie's. And then we go back to our prison.
And we hear about the prison riot a couple times.
That's right, yeah.
Like once with, I think, Hollis Mason, where he's listening to the news, they talk about the riot. And then again with the Knot Tops.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but originally, first they mentioned that the guy who was burned in the chow line,
yeah,
that he might die at any moment. And then we hear that he died. And then we hear that it was like the riot has broken out.
A little progression.
And other people have died, yeah.
And then, yeah, there's been 5 deaths in the riot.
So now we see the riot, or at least we see the outside of Rorschach's cell.
That's right.
While the riot's going on, and Big Figure and his goons are trying to get inside.
Yeah.
It looks like they brought they're just kind of like, I guess. Oh no! This is the part where they have the arc welder.
The arc welder.
So they brought that. They're setting it up.
Yeah.
Big Figure's
bust into Rorschach's cell, getting all
pissed off, and so like, you know, one of his goons is like, "Hey, notice like no more like sarcasm, no big tall order, small world shit." And then Rorschach's just like, "Yeah, fat chance," because the dude's fat. So he's like, "Oh, why you little?" And reaches in the bars, giving Rorschach a perfect opportunity to tie his pinkies together so that they can't get to the lock.
Yeah, they just don't seem to understand that he's not stuck in there with them.
They're stuck in there with him.
That's right. Really, clearly. Breaks the guy's fingers, which Rorschach does better than anybody.
He knows about pinkies.
He sure does. Big Figure can't get to the lock because the big fat guy's in the way.
Lawrence, we find out
Lawrence, his name is, yeah. So that's the end of Lawrence.
Yeah, Michael has to go all box cutter on him and cuts his throat.
Nothing personal, Larry.
Then the blood spatter on Rorschach's shirt as he just stands there and takes it.
A lot.
It matches like the blood spatter on his trench coat from earlier when he killed is that from when he killed that one dude in
the dogs and the dude? Yeah.
I think so.
Probably. Born in blood.
All the while we get the bottom panel of each of these pages, being the owl ship getting ever closer, coming closer to the prison.
Getting ready for the prison break.
And then finally, next page, we got a huge panel of the owl ship hovering over the prison as the cops are shooting it. And Night Owl fires up the Screechers.
The Screechers.
Which is pretty cool.
Breaking glass and deterring guards from approaching his ship.
Yep.
I do want to go back up a sec.
Sure.
The Big Figure, I love he's talking about how once we get through, then you'll know what the score is. And Rorschach is like, 1-0, your move.
Come and get me. Yep.
So good.
Yeah. Dude's got balls, if nothing else. Night Owl's fired up the Screechers. And what I like about that is, at the end of the Night Owl chapter, when we got that supplemental material and he's talking about the screech of an owl, how it paralyzes it, the victim or whatever. I like how he's taken that idea and like weaponized it in his ship. You know, he's got like owl inspired gadgetry even.
For sure.
And it's super cool.
That's awesome. Busts into the prison.
He and Laurie are yeah, they're just breaking glass and kicking butts. And then so, yeah,
Rorschach in the cell.
They fire up the arc welder.
They finally break through. He's coming in there. And Rorschach breaks the toilet and water spills out and electrocutes Michael, the other big guy.
I guess it's a good thing that Cable was in a state of disrepair.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that wouldn't work.
Good thing. It all worked out well. I love the panel of Big Figure. You see the look on his face when he realizes that both of his goons are now dead.
Yeah.
And he's just terrified.
And like all the other guys who were there have apparently scrammed. Like there's nobody left.
Right.
And so he's just like, oh, okay. He drops his cigar and he's just out. Because now it's just Rorschach is going all Terminator on him.
Just walking slowly, yeah, like Michael Myers mm-hmm. style.
Meanwhile, Night Owl and Silk Spectre are making their way through the prison, like trying to figure out how to find Rorschach.
Right.
Dan says he's supposed to be in solitary. Shouldn't be too hard to track down as we cut to Rorschach leaving tracks of blood in his wake.
But, yeah, which right.
is both, you know, metaphorical and literal.
Just follow the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Big Figure. I don't know why he thought hiding in the men's room was a good idea.
Right.
It seems like a dead end.
Yeah. Like how many men's rooms have like more than one exit?
Right. It's like in a horror movie when you run upstairs. You never run upstairs. It's always. Well,
should you not run upstairs, though? I feel like that's different, isn't it?
I think they talk about this in Scream.
Do they?
Yeah, it's like one of the rules in horror movies. Don't run upstairs. And then I think at one point they actually jump out of a window and scream and that didn't end well. Or they get thrown out of a window. I forget. We'll save that for our Scream podcast. So then they find Rorschach. He goes into the bathroom to take care of some business. Kills Big Figure.
I do like how, so after he electrocutes Mike with the toilet, you know, he has that line, you know, never disposed of sewage with a toilet before. It's obvious, really.
It's obvious, really.
Apparently, it's the second time he's done that now because he flushes Big Figure, so to speak.
This is true. It's like it's his new obsession.
He's like, huh, this toilet thing's really working for me.
That's great.
Maybe I could rebrand. This Rorschach thing is weird, so nobody's into it anymore. It could be the toilet killer.
Perfect. It's got a nice ring to it.
That maybe we should workshop the name.
Flush
of it.
Evil. It's terrible.
The Flusher.
The Flusher. So they're escaping an Archie. But Dan wants to make one last stop home. You couldn't have packed before the jailbreak, Dan. Why?
It's a good point.
This seems like a poor planning.
Like, this is the worst time to go back to the home. You know, the Detective Fine is on to you.
This is the height of the heat on you. You should have had all your ducks in a row. I don't know. It just seems sloppy.
But they go there anyway.
To be fair, he's no criminal. He's a hero at heart. So
that's true. But I mean, he's thought about everything else so well. You would think that.
Yeah, you would think he would have accounted for it. I guess he's just distracted. Lori's throwing him off his game a little bit.
Maybe.
I want to go back up a little bit because we talked about the detective in his home looking mm-hmm. at the calendar of the owl. And then he ended up looking a page ahead to mm-hmm. see there was a hawk.
Said right? what there's like two kinds of people.
Two kinds of people. Those who look ahead, read ahead, and those who don't.
Yeah.
What kind of person are you? And Dan is the kind of person that would not read ahead.
No, especially on a calendar. Like you only get 1 month to enjoy that particular image.
Yeah.
Now, Dan's calendar is of birds, whereas I feel like Detective Fine's calendar might be of a different kind of bird.
Oh.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Glee. Mm. He reveals November's calendar to Dan. Spoils it for
Spoiler
him.
Spoiler alert.
What a
detective
dick.
Finds. What kind of a person are you? Are you the kind of person that would read ahead or would you avoid
I've
spoilers?
Had month count. Like I've been, you know, you get for Christmas every once in a while, you get like one of those calendars.
Daily or monthly?
Usually monthly, but I have gotten daily ones before.
You know, it's weird. They also have weekly.
That
I don't want to know that person.
When I owned one, I did not look ahead.
Really?
Really.
Well, we're those two people because I look ahead. Oh, I even had the deal.
How do we even have a podcast together?
I don't know. I guess, that's what makes that's our dynamic. We can't both be the same person.
Who saves my calendar image for 1 month at a time.
That's right.
Joe's the guy who looks ahead and spoils it.
Come into my room in January. I might have May up on the wall. You never know.
I was waiting till May to see that.
So now we cut back to Dan and Rorschach and Lori back at his place. Mm-hmm. First thing Lori does is changes the calendar ahead of schedule.
Right, because you got to have your calendar right, even though we're leaving this place possibly forever.
But we're not there yet. He says, Lori, what are you doing? Changing your calendar. Another hour, it'll be November. I think we're witnessing those two types of people.
Oh, shit.
That's what I... Yeah.
Although, is Lori looking ahead or is she just getting ready in advance? Because she's only got an hour of October left.
All I'm saying is it's not quite November and she's...
Maybe this is the moment where we find out for sure that Dan and Lori aren't going to work out.
That's what sealed it for me. I was on the fence, but now that I saw...
It's like, these two kids are going to be just fine. Oh, shit. She turned the calendar ahead.
Oh, my God. She's...
It's ruined. And then, of course, her ex shows up.
Yeah, it's just it's not work. The Dan Lori relationship is not great right now
because of the calendar.
The calendar. Two types of people. That's all I'm saying. So Lori decides she's going to pack up some of her stuff, too. If we're packing stuff up, I might as well get some of my things. Goes into her room and who should be there but Dr. Manhattan.
Back from Mars already.
Reading a magazine about himself.
Right. we see her like deciding whether or not to like pack her nostalgia perfume. John talks to her about, you know, we're scheduled to have a conversation in the future on Mars. And it's like, wait, what? He's like, well, you know, I can see the future, so it's going to happen. So I just figured I'd just come in here and make it happen.
Right.
Since it's going to happen. I don't know. That's a really confusing thing.
This
to have
part's
to
kind
with.
Of breaking my brain on it. I thought I understood Dr. Manhattan, but now we've got. And I love that Lori calls it. It's also Deus Ex Machina, which it's almost like they're breaking the fourth wall when she's saying that.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what is happening.
And Dr. Manhattan even says, like, you know, it's. He says he supposes it is with an extra layer of irony because he's basically a deus himself.
Exactly.
A god. Yeah.
So it's like how would he have known that Lori wanted to talk to him?
Hmm. It's not that he knew she wanted to talk. It's that he knew that they would be talking.
But how would they if he didn't teleport her to Mars?
But he does.
I know. But this is...
He only knows the future that actually happens.
But for it to happen, he had to be. Back on Earth, what brought him back to Earth?
The fact that he knew that he was going to be talking to Lori. Yeah, it's weird, but it's honestly the only way to do it without creating a paradox. Because if you think like, okay, so like he's supposed to have a conversation with Lori on Mars. If he chooses not to, then that creates a paradox because how could he know about something that then he then prevents it doesn't happen? So,
but
it's wonky.
It's something.
But yeah, so he teleports her away, long story short. Like, I mean, if we lived in a world where there was a being who perceived time differently, we wouldn't understand it really either.
Wouldn't.
It's things would happen that would be like, oh, wait, how does that make sense? Like, why are you here doing this now? He's like, well, because I saw it in the future. Duh. And like, oh, my God, you're breaking my brain.
I don't know. I could understand like he knows the future. Mm-hmm. But when that involves him interfering with it. I don't know.
Because he also knows what he's going to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to accept that I'll never fully understand Dr. Manhattan.
I mean, that's fair. Like, I don't not fully understand Dr. Manhattan. He's confusing. But I love that he's in the story. I think it's awesome.
He's a great character. Yeah. So he's saying that they're scheduled for a meeting on Mars where she's going to try to convince him to save the world. And she's like, I have to convince you?
Yeah. Which I feel like that's maybe the least surprising thing about Dr. Manhattan, that you'd have to convince him to save the world. Because it's like, you know, he watched the comedian kill a pregnant lady and it was just like, huh, that's funny. He said that a live body and a dead body have the same number of particles.
Yeah.
You know, he's a little bit detached. You might have to might take some convincing to tell him to figure out why he should save humanity.
So then Dan walks in and sees Dr. Manhattan and Lori getting ready to teleport to Mars.
And man, this has got to be a confusing day for Dan.
For sure. Lori's just like, don't worry, Dan, it's fine. Good luck and everything. See you. Bye.
Yeah, it's like that meme, like, here's your girlfriend. Here's you as Dan Dreiberg. Here's the guy she told you not to worry about. Yeah, it's Dr. Manhattan. The blue god who can see the future and teleport.
She keeps talking about.
She brings him up all the time.
She brings him up a lot. I mean, to be fair, what was it? 20 years they were together. So.
Yeah. I mean,
and
yeah.
This is the early. True. This is like right after they stopped seeing each other. Of course, that
it's natural that she would want to talk about him. And it also, he's a prescient being with omnipotence. So, you know, kind of worth conversing about every now and then.
And as all of this is going on, of course, the police are at Dan's door.
And they kick the door in. They kick in the lock that he just got replaced.
That's right.
Like Detective Fine saw the dude replacing that lock, and now he kicks it in.
So Rorschach comes in. Daniel, the door won't hold long. Must go now before. You know what? Rorschach is telling him that the door won't hold long. I believe him when he says it.
He knows about doors.
With that door. And you know, what that lock.
And for once, it wasn't Rorschach that broke it.
That's right. For once. So they leave. The Knot Tops, back at the newsstand, hearing about Rorschach being broken out of prison by Night Owl, they assume it's the original Night Owl for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hollis Mason, and they know exactly where he lives. So they go out, leaving the newsstand and you know,
they go on a crazy Katie fueled.
That's right.
I don't know.
Bunch of lunatics.
Gang binge or whatever.
Running right past a gigantic ad for Nostalgia by Veidt.
I do like how, like, during this conversation, one of them is just kind of describing the effects of a nuclear attack.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then we have Tales of the Black Freighter, where our sailor pirate dude finally decides he's had enough and jumps into the water, only to find that he's
drown.
On land. Yeah, he's finally made landfall.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like Tales of the Black Freighter's coming to a head for sure. The tensions with the Cold War are coming to a head. This whole conspiracy is like really lighting up. Everything's getting really intense now. Like every issue of this comic book is just continues to build and build and build. And it's like you can feel the tension.
I feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it, too?
Oh, I feel it in places. Let me tell you.
Why is it that the Gazette is always late? When you need
that's a great
the
question.
News, it's never on time.
Maybe they're just like on the breaking edge of everything, and that's why
maybe
they're late. They get it out as soon as the news happens.
I'm just saying the news, they have like one job is to release on schedule, and it seems like invariably somebody is late to the party.
Oh well,
whatever.
I'll just buy the new Frontiersman instead.
That's right. I would prefer it that I get updates every second directly to my phone.
Well, that would just cause society to break down. You'd be glued to your phone constantly. You wouldn't have any know how to do anything on your own or figure out your own life like a millennial or what have you.
Yeah, maybe we're better off with paper news. Maybe we should go back. So yeah, the Nostalgia ad. I like the tagline. Oh, how the ghost of you clings.
Yeah, which is a neat description for perfume and also kind of creepy.
It's creepy. It's appropriate for this chapter because it's called, what is it, Old Ghosts?
Old Ghosts.
And also it's a line from a song by Etta James.
Oh.
And Louis Armstrong.
Oh, Armstrong.
Armstrong.
Yes.
Louis Hamstring. yeah. I've added the song to our Watchmen playlist.
Sweet.
So good song. So then, these Knot Tops come approaching the Hollis Mason's place.
Yeah, another sequence of pages. So after like the prison break and all that, the pages resumes that format that you pointed out where we have six on top and one big one on the bottom.
Yeah.
And so that happens as they storm Hollis Mason's auto repair shop.
By the way, the sign outside, obsolete models, a specialty.
Yes.
How appropriate for the old Night Owl.
Totally. And it's especially kind of heartbreaking after that conversation we saw between him and Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I'll be able to fix cars forever, you know?
Yeah. And it'll be a while before you affect cars.
Yeah. He's like, well, actually, I've made electric cars economical and affordable for everyone because I can produce lithium.
Oh my God.
So he's like, oh, geez. So now the sign, it's like it would have been, any cars, you know, that he could fix.
Yeah.
Now it's obsolete models because that's that's all he knows about. So
he doesn't want to learn to code and figure out how to fix electric cars.
I mean, well, he's an old man. That's hard to totally switch gears like that.
It would be tough.
But yeah, so they bang on his door and he's like, oh, I've got trick-or-treaters. I better get some candy. Yeah. And
those friendly their neighborhood youngsters. Kids bang at my door with pitchforks and torches.
Let's see, apples and candy. He's offering apples, so he's that kind of old man.
He's just, yeah, I'm surprised. You know what? Honestly, if he had toothbrushes, I wouldn't be surprised. He seems like the kind of guy.
So, yeah, he opens the door. He gets trampled by gangsters.
Oh, man.
And we have this amazingly rendered, heartbreaking scene of him, like, flashing back to his superhero days.
Back when he was the one just beating down on helpless criminals.
Yeah, so we see him fighting, like, Captain Axis and who is it? The underboss or something.
Oh.
And they're all in present day. It's just Hollis Mason getting his ass beat.
Oof.
And then they grab the statue, the Night Owl statue off his desk and bring that down on his face. And we see the pumpkin crash.
Yeah.
Onto the floor.
Beautifully done. Heartbreaking. That look in Hollis Mason's eyes is.
As the shadow forms like a Night Owl mask over his face.
Yeah.
Just as it's about to hit him.
Durf, what have you done?
Oh, man. What did you do?
He said, let's get out of here.
And then, like, yeah, his girlfriend is, like, freaking out on the Katies. And he's like, let's go. We're finished. Just as our kids, the kids we saw at the beginning, show up at Mr. Mason's place to find him. Just, yeah, wow.
And now we see the old ghost.
I'm pretty sure those kids are now going to grow up to be vigilantes.
I think there's a whole
this
story.
This is their origin story.
Yeah, that's their origin story. They keep those costumes.
Yeah.
They end up
the devil,
adjusting.
The pirate, and the ghost.
The devil, the pirate, and the ghost.
Sure. Why not?
That seems appropriate. I feel like
maybe one is
ghost, of course.
Shall we ding and transition into spoiler territory? Or do we want to talk about the New Frontiersman?
Let's talk about the supplemental material.
Okie doke.
But also that final shot with the kids there saying Mr. Mason, and you've got his bloody slipper, the blood spatter again.
Of course.
And kind of a yellow picture frame. So you got the yellow with the blood spatter again.
Mm-hmm. Right across his face on the picture.
Right.
There's also blood spatter.
It's just a lot of blood
on spatter. The words ingratitude.
Ingratitude,
making
yeah.
it like ingratitude.
Mm.
I don't know if that means anything, but you know, it's there.
It's there. So, yeah, Ghost Kid, obviously the title is Old Ghosts, the pirate, probably the black freighter, the devil.
Because the devil's in the details.
That's what it is.
Just like any Alan Moore comic. There's details everywhere.
We figured it out. There are a lot of details. All right. Supplemental material. We have an issue of the New Frontiersman.
It's like that, the pre-print.
Said issue from earlier.
Honor is like a hawk. Sometimes it must go hooded.
A hawk, you say? Like the hawk of November in Dan Dreiberg's calendar?
Ooh, killing a sparrow.
Mm. So basically, that issue of the New Frontiersman is bashing the Nova Express.
I honestly found it kind of hard to read because it reads like super propagandized.
Big
like,
time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the most interesting and most important part of it is probably the last page, actually, because that's where he kind of unwittingly sort of lays out all the pieces of the conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Without even knowing it, like all the people who are missing.
Talking about the Max Shea thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so before that, though, we just get a little bit more insight into the New Frontiersmen. They're basically defending the KKK.
Yeah.
it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the political cartoon is just like, a mess.
Yeah.
To put it one way, you know, ripping on Nova Express with Doug Roth here, pulling the mask off of a superhero who represents U.S. patriotism. While the Russians and crime and all them are, you know, it's just
all whatever. Being run by the communists.
Yeah. Of course, because that's how it works.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
But then the second part of it, they talk about Max Shea. The hunt is called off. He's been missing for so long. They're just
it's pointless.
Who throwing cares in the anyway? Towel.
But then he mentions, yeah, this whole list of other people who are also missing.
We've got a radical architect, mm-hmm. a surrealist painter, a hard science fiction writer, whatever that means.
Hard science fiction is like science fiction that stays as close to like actual science as possible.
Mm.
So it'd be like, you know, sort of like 2001, A Space Odyssey, where like all the spaceships and stuff and stations and whatnot are basically now what we have today.
Mm.
So, yeah, that would be an example of hard sci-fi.
Is there soft sci-fi?
Yeah. Like softer sci-fi would be like Star Trek.
They call it softer.
It's just softer than like it's just a way to describe the different.
Do they have styles. A fully erect science fiction? Because I would be very interested in.
That's just straight science because it'll get you going.
It gets the job done. so we hear some familiar names in the list of other people missing. Hira Manish,
yeah, that was the artist that we saw
earlier drawing that whatever that was.
Yes.
And then also among some of the disappearing people, a clairvoyant who died of a stroke.
His head was stolen.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
So what would somebody, if there were a vast and insidious conspiracy, what would they want? A radical architect, a surrealist painter, a hard sci-fi writer, avant-garde composer, a eugenics specialist, and a clairvoyant.
You know, and it's... I think the most hilarious thing is that, like, we get, you know, 2 pages of Godfrey's ramblings showing him as being, like, the least credible person in the whole story. And then this last page of him basically saying, like, here are all the pieces of the conspiracy. Here's who's missing. Here's, like, the whole puzzle.
Yeah.
Like, what you need to figure it out is to look into these deaths. And he's, you know, nobody's going to buy it because it's fucking that guy.
Unless you're Rorschach, and then you actually do take some of these puzzle pieces and figure it out.
That's a good point. But he was not, he's not around for this issue of the New Frontiersman.
I'm just going to say, if it weren't for this hero of the New Frontiersman, we would have never...
Hector Godfrey?
Rorschach perhaps never would have stumbled upon this conspiracy, and who knows where we'd be. Probably no different. And with that, I think we should go into spoiler territory before I say too much.
That was our ding, in case you couldn't tell.
The ding. All right, spoiler territory. What you got, Jimmy?
So first thing, it's not like a huge spoiler, but like in, you know, the HBO show.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, we get the kids dressing up as a pirate, an owl, and a ghost.
That's right.
With Cal. That this obvious callback to the kids dressing up in this one. The only difference being that the owl is now a devil.
Mm.
So yeah, you know, just a cool little detail they tied in to the TV show. What else? So like the conspiracy is like turning up huge, and we actually see the squid monster in drawing form. And so this scene on the island that's like really kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The audience is like, what the heck is this all about?
Yeah.
We saw a picture of Max Shea on the previous page, and then we see Max Shea. So it's like they're telling us like that's him.
Uh-huh.
In a way, they're also telling us he's important. You know, the weird stuff that Hector Godfrey is obsessed with, despite being a Klan sympathizer and whatnot. Turns out he's onto it. It's important because that is the fucking creature that, while they think they're on a movie set, they're actually creating a genetic monstrosity, which is going to be dropped on New York.
Killing most of New York.
A whole gaggle of people.
A gaggle of people in New York. Oof. Yes, that the island scene. I remember the first time I read this, I didn't understand that scene at all. Kind of skipped over it. Like, this is why do they keep throwing this irrelevant information? I'm trying to figure out what's going on here.
I can't see the mystery for all these clues.
And then reading it a second time, it's like, holy shit, I can't believe they're telling me all this information right now.
They're basically giving it away.
They're spoiling the story. I mean, you've got her drawing. It's very unclear what it is, but you do kind of see tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear her talk about a beak. So you very easily could deduce that we've got a squid of some sort.
So here. Alan Moore in the script mentioned to Dave Gibbons, like, you know, feel free to just make this thing as unsettling as possible. Yeah. If you want to put like a puckering like orifice underneath that beak, like just freak people out psychosexually, that's fine.
I was going to say there's very much a vagina and an anus.
Yeah.
Look going on there.
So that's intentional. We know on their part because Alan Moore basically said so. And he says, like, you know, I'm down for anything. So go nuts. Like he's telling Dave Gibbons, which, you know, it's funny because by today's standards, like in terms of making something look gross or creepy, it's kind of tame.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like at least
it is also just a black and white, like a sketch.
Charcoal drawing. No, yeah.
You don't have blood and, you know, colors to.
That's true.
Enhance it. It could be pretty gruesome.
What's not quite as tame, I feel like, is when this dude gets electrocuted in Rorschach's shell. That's the pose on that is very nice. It reminds me of the dude who bit down the cyanide.
Oh, yeah.
Against Adrian Veidt.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like sort of that.
His contortions.
Yeah, you kind of feel all the muscles seizing up as that happens. And it's hard to imagine that not being painful.
Yeah. Just real quick, I'm going to go off track here for a second, if that's all right.
We never do that on
this
watching,
podcast. I'm watching, you know, Disney Plus. We've got The Simpsons, the entire catalog. I'm watching one of the episodes, and the prison recently switched their electric chairs to solar. And Snake's sitting in there.
So it like takes forever.
It's like, I've been here all day. Can you at least moisten my sponge? All right, back on.
They don't have any. They need to get some of Elon Musk's new solar tech.
That's right. They should. Great show.
Yeah. Not in the least bit relevant.
Not at all. Well, awesome. Except for electricity coursing through you.
Okay.
I tied it all together.
Way to bring it back.
I did, of course. One thing I want to point out is we've got Lori and Dan in the owl cave, you know, planning for the big escape. And Dan's talking about how maybe there is she's saying, you believe this conspiracy thing? And he's like, you know, this is not a coincidence. Maybe that cancer scare media assault that prompted John's exile was part of somebody's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone intended to start World War III.
Yeah. So a lot of characters are definitely picking up on this.
Yeah.
And Lori still writes it off as like, oh, please, like you're sounding paranoid.
He's so close, but he doesn't want to start World War III. He wants to avoid World War III.
Indeed. But maybe part of avoiding it means like almost starting it.
Yeah. Or just, you know, postponing it and then recurring squid fall helps to maintain.
Hopefully.
For years and years to come.
Until you have to freeze all the squid and launch them down as a deadly squid assault.
Yeah, I suppose you could do that and it would work.
Theoretically.
In theory. What else? Yeah, okay. But then, the next panel, we've got Dan walking away. Don't worry, it's early days. A few skeletons are bound to keep jumping out of the closet in response to her talking about John again.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I was thinking about Adrian. We ought to contact him, but maybe not till after the jailbreak.
Yeah.
Imagine if he would have contacted him before the jailbreak.
Right.
Right.
But then, like, he's got an explanation for why Adrian would probably, like, not want to go along with
it. Yeah, I mean, in his position, knowing beforehand would be compromising.
Yeah.
He might feel obliged to stop us. That's even better.
Mm-hmm.
Because he absolutely would feel obliged to stop you, but for maybe different reasons.
But at the same time, he's so close to the end of his plan, it almost doesn't even matter.
It sounds like we're getting pretty close to when it all goes to fruition, right?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well. They even have the Max Shea when they're talking about the squid.
Uh-huh.
She talks about how she hopes that they keep it cold enough or refrigerated.
That's right, yeah.
And he says where it's headed, it's going to be plenty cold.
Do
we think he's talking about Karnak?
I assume so, but I don't know how he would know that.
I don't know either.
Maybe he knows that it's being shipped to Antarctica.
But then later in Karnak, we get that scene where everybody's in the vivarium and then they all die.
Mm-hmm.
Was he there for that?
No.
Max Shea?
No.
So we don't know.
He probably dies on the island.
On the island. Yeah.
Or is just stranded
left there. Yeah. I was going to say.
Like maybe the real Watchmen sequel should be about these people like
Max Shea escaping from an island on a raft made of dead bodies.
A raft of dead mutant squids.
Oh my God. Because he wrote that, right?
Yeah, he did.
So art imitating life? What would that be?
Yeah, something like that. Inside art.
Something like that. Yeah, the squid picture. By the way, that the drawing of the squid looks incredibly similar to in the TV series, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, when
it's like they
yes, the one that they use
modeled it after that
Adrian's trial.
Yeah,
which I'm not sure how that got there exactly. I guess he told them about it.
Maybe he saved it and took it to Mars with him.
Well, like he was kind of like empty-handed when
you're right.
Dr. Manhattan teleported him.
Yep, he would have had to have someone draw that at some point for him. In description.
But I mean, he told them the whole story. It sounds like they had like all the evidence they were citing was stuff he must have told them at some point. So it's like part of the whole drama he created to, you know, antagonize himself. It's weird.
It's weird. That's really all of my head.
Yeah, same. Excellent issue, but still it's like it's hard to really like. It's not the most memorable issue because it's like still building in the grander scheme of the story.
Yeah.
It's like one of the little cog wheels turning. It's the death of Hollis Mason, which is like
sad.
You know,
so
super sad
to see him go.
But at the same time, it's not, you know, it's nothing that's like super momentous in the scale of what's to come, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Tensions are definitely rising, though. That's a huge theme of this. They keep revisiting that.
Speaking of what's to come, our next issue, next time we'll be covering chapter 9, The Darkness of Mere Being.
Oh, my.
And so I'm excited for that one.
Yes, as am I. It's kind of hard to believe that issue 8, so what are we, two-thirds of the way there?
Yeah.
And it feels like we're already almost at the
finish line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're already kind of figuring out Karnak and heading over to Adrian.
And things are intense. Like, you know, we just had Rorschach sprung from jail.
Yeah.
And in basically a bloodbath.
Yeah.
And so, like, what are they going to do now? Like, basically, Dan, Rorschach, and Laurie are all fugitives. The cops are after them.
Right.
So they have to figure something out, go somewhere. Like, we know that they're going to go to Karnak and face down Adrian. But if you don't know that, because this is the spoiler section.
We're in spoiler territory. Here. We warned you.
Yeah. Then like it's you're left wondering like, well, what happens to their lives now? And what is Dr. Manhattan going to do? And where the heck is Adrian in all of this?
Will Dr. Manhattan find love? That's the big burning question.
He's had plenty of love. He just, you know, it's not about that for him. It's about figuring out what's the point of everything. Of humanity, of being a god, of Mars.
So we know that once they arrive in Karnak, it's already too late. The attack has already happened. How close do we think we are right now to the attack? It seems like...
Well, so this is Halloween night. The attack happens on November 2nd. So it's at least close, 24 like hours.
Okay, now. Wow, geez. So within 48 hours.
Yeah.
We're close.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Indeed.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you like the show, the best way to subscribe to support us is to subscribe and leave a 5-star review.
You could also support us on Patreon. We have the best Patreon supporters ever.
That's right. We got a new one recently.
Yep.
Shauna. Shout out to Shauna. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Share us with your friends. Tell people about us.
OneDrinkIn.com.
OneDrinkIn.com. Until next time.
Life's more fun
with One Drink In.